who it is. It's us again, your favorite Audible friends, the besties you never met yet. We have had some pretty fun and important conversations. If you're new here, welcome to the Limitless Conversations podcast, the podcast for woke girls that love
dumb stuff.
If you're a return listener, thank you for your support. You are an OG, and we are so glad to have you on this journey with us. Ladies, how are we all doing?
Oh, so good.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
Missed you just as much.
I mean, guys.
Coming into the space, it's actually just so nice how they've tweaked it a bit. And it's just like, yay, good to be back.
We'll take some visuals for context.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, some visuals.
A lot of things have been happening. And I do need to note that we have a wedding this year.
Yes, we do!
Our amazing co-host, Dominique Grevy, is getting married.
Congratulations! Thank you so much.
We're so thrilled for you. We cannot wait to pop that champompolo.
No, I'm so excited. I still need to get used to it because our guest today as well, she's actually the first already getting into my new surname, and I giggle, I get all giddy, and she's like, hello, Mrs. Mutsepe. I'm like,
hi, you.
You know, so I'm so excited for this year. The months are really going by so quickly, so that's
There's something about this year. Somebody press fast forward. I feel like I'm on a Netflix.
Pause.
No,
slow-mo.
Slow-mo.
We're already on fast forward. Girl, it's April.
Yeah. I'm saying yesterday. I feel like somebody pressed the fast forward button.
A lot.
No, there's a lot to do. I don't even have a dress for you, Dee, so please. Cool. On today's episode, we are joined by a power lady, which we will introduce in a moment. Before that, I just wanted to first set the tone, which is, what comes to mind for you when we celebrate Women's Month or Women's Day? For me personally, for example, in the past, I celebrated hashtag Girl Power, you know, just that part of it mainly, and I would potentially post a woman's appreciation post or a story on IG. Feel like that's where it would end, mainly. Yeah. More recently, and maybe it's because I've become a mom, I don't know, I ponder a lot about where we are as women, right? Mm-hmm. How far we've come, how far we still need to go. And yes, much progress has been made, but in reality, some days that progress is hard to see or feel. And I'm pretty sure the women in this room can attest to that.
Amen.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, on that note, allow me to introduce to you our beautiful, smart, and intelligent guest, Leslie Smith.
Yay. Good morning. Thank you.
Hi. Look at her voice.
I get so excited when people introduce me. So
look, I could go on, but I'd prefer it if, you know, the listeners heard it straight from you.
I was hoping a song would play before.
We can do that.
Tell us a little bit more
about yourself.
I was invited by Dominique to be here. Miss, I'm getting married soon. So thank you. Firstly, I would like to say thank you for having me. It's quite an honor and such a beautiful topic and such a beautiful day to share this day with you guys. Beautiful woman around me. More about me. I'm from the south of Johannesburg. And I think most importantly, I am not a feminist. And I grew up in a very patriarchal family. I believe in equal roles. As a young child, I was always surrounded with calamities. There's always issues in the township. There's always issues that arise around you. So most of the time, it's living experiences, you know, that we can speak about. But I grew up in the south of Johannesburg with one sibling and both my folks. And my grandparents played a huge role in my life. They're after school. And I actually told my mom this morning, you know, there's very few of us that really tries our best to step outside of this, you know, what is known as the generational curse. So I did step out and I went to tertiary, followed suit after my brother, and I studied law. I started off with a commercial degree first, and thereafter I decided to specialize in mining and metals.
Oh, wow.
So most of my experiences as a child, I would say, you know, made me want to study law so that I could bring awareness to other people that we have a beautiful constitution and we have access to so many rights, and we actually have a beautiful structure of legislation and regulations in this country. The issue is that I think our people don't understand, or they're not aware of the rights, and that's... Right. one of the things I wanted to create. I never had a dream of running up and down with a cloak at court. I wanted to stand in every school and every civic theater or civic center and explain to people how amazing the law is in South Africa. We're very progressive.
We are.
And we have some massive milestones in this country to celebrate from a legal and a legislation perspective.
Agreed.
But that's me. I now live in the east part of Johannesburg. I spent a bit of time in Central and West Africa because of mining.
Yeah.
So one thing that I can tell you guys is that generally when, you know, I'm invited to podcasts or interviews, I always want to make people aware that we sit with the same issues, not only in South Africa, but in Africa and globally.
Yeah.
So working in Central Africa and West Africa, you realize that we actually are quite progressive as a country.
Yep.
And we should be cognizant of that. Because in order for us to move forward, we need to understand that we have an amazing foundation that we can build from.
Agreed.
But that's me.
That's amazing. I actually didn't know about your background in Central Africa. Yeah. I kind of wish I could adopt you into my own home country because we're having so many problems.
Where are you from?
Mozambique.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
And I'm sure you know about all our amazing resources.
We worked in Bemba. There was a power plant there. And for a year, I traveled up from Maputo to Bemba. And it's also amazing land, beautiful, but a lot of awareness needs to be created.
As you know, a lot of more recent events.
I think the responsibility lies with us.
I agree with you.
Fully.
I agree with you fully, 100%. Thank you for that, Leslie. And we're so thrilled and privileged to have you in the studio with us. And we honestly cannot wait to unpack all the amazing content today. And I just want to get started. On the note of International Women's Month, this past International Women's Month, in fact, March, the UN geared the month towards the awareness of equality, and they dubbed the theme Women in Leadership, Achieving an Equal Future in a COVID-19 World.
Wow. Yeah, and I mean, you know, just to pose my first question to you, it's that, you know, women and children tend to be the most vulnerable during any crisis, right? So how have women specifically been affected during this pandemic in general, based on like your opinion and your understanding?
Definitely. I mean, the first things that we should highlight is that we've been leading these conversations for a while now. Mm-hmm. So the conversation that we really need to start having is what's next.
Yeah.
Because we know that equality, you know, we're speaking about equal pay, we're speaking about gender equality, we're speaking about racial equality and unbiasedness. But what is next? And just as in the UN conference, our very own Phumzile Mlambo Ngcuka said that these conversations are taking place. However, we need to take giant leaps and big steps to progression. Yeah. So we really are there. You know, at work when they escalate an issue when you're in trouble?
Yeah.
We are the generation escalating.
Oh, yeah, we really are. Yeah, we
millennials
really
are. Definitely. Yeah. We're not to the top. And like,
We're escalating right to the top. So the UN has given instructions. Your International Criminal Court has been given instructions. Your multiple NGOs, huge connections all over the world have been told, if you don't fix things, you know, we have to start passing regulations in this country, and we already have, and the rest of the world, so that we can gain equality. Because the next is, we no longer fight, we want equality. We know I have placards up. Yeah. That happened many years ago. Okay. We're now speaking about how are we going to change it, and what's the narrative to sustain women making decisions that affect women.
Agreed.
You know, you can no longer sit with a board and sit with a top tier that's making decisions on behalf of women, and women are not sitting amongst those decisions.
Agreed.
So what's excellent is now we're sitting in situations where we are now forced to have integration. We are now forced by government and certain regulations in industries to integrate women and to integrate, for that matter, racial transformation. You have to have programs, otherwise you're going to be left behind. And I know now organizations are being held accountable. should they not take these big steps? Because they know that we have to take steps. You know, just like our mom said in the UN conference, we know we have to take the steps, but how fast are we taking it?
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed.
And I feel I completely and 100% understand your view on that. But we could also say that COVID threw a spanner in the works.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
A lot of people lost jobs.
Yes.
Retrenched. A lot of people resigned. A lot of those people were women also. Yes. Because somebody needs to obviously take the load at home with
course.
The kids. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that that role is normally given to the woman, or the woman would have to make that decision
automatically,
right?
So
how does that now affect this agenda?
I think for me, like I said, we know that it's existing, a pandemic yet, and there were online schooling. Women automatically had to assume the position of 2-3 jobs.
Mm.
And, you know, my thinking always goes back to, you know, right on top, because when you're sitting around the boardroom table and you're making decisions on work from home and who's going to work from home and how are we going to do this, are we still going to have board meetings, or are we going to have meetings in the middle of the day, you know, during online school, decision making is still happening amongst those that is not affected.
Agreed.
So I'm speaking about a living experience where we're sitting around a board table and, you know, you have males that are speaking about, you know, the show has to go on, our business continuity plan has to go on, regardless of whether your kid is sick at work, at home or,
not.
You know, whether you have to take care, your helper's, you know, not there, your nanny is taking care of her children.
Right.
So it's just a ripple effect,
exactly.
You know, and the one thing that I do think is that it comes from the top. You know, it comes from the top with your unequal pay, you know, unequal roles. Women automatically would somehow in certain instances get retrenched because we are retrenching lower tier we're keeping the business continuity plan going with your ex-cos that's making decision.
Correct.
So I believe that, I mean, like I said in the beginning, I'm not a feminist, and one of the reasons why I'm not a feminist is because I do believe that we can no longer in this day and age start separating gender or gender specify. We can speak about women, but we need to start opening the conversation that we need to be unbiased around the table.
That's
whether
true.
You are male or whether you are female, because those two gender types no longer exist independently.
Agreed. I love that insight. I think that's definitely perspective. I guess where I came from when... because I feel like I am a feminist, to be completely honest with you. I guess it's the whole point about the fact that women are still playing catch up, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm also mindful of the fact that I'm privileged to be in South Africa, for example. But when I look at the situation where I come from, where women are completely disenfranchised, you know, they are still, if not unemployed, they only have access to low-income jobs.
Exactly.
You know, it's all of that that really makes me and drives me to look at things from a more feminist perspective, because I feel like there's just so much catching up we still need to do before we even, you know, make room for that. But I understand your perspective, and I think that I do need to keep that in mind when considering my views.
No, definitely. Absolutely. We're escalating, right?
We're escalating.
I think our biggest issue would also be with the conversations that are being had and with the current issues that we have, and like you're saying, with the top tier people still making the crucial decisions, there's no inclusion. We'd like to think that there is, and everybody cries fair equality, and they throw all those words around and they throw all that jargon around, but the end of day, there is no inclusion.
Yes.
Whether be it racial, whether be it gender based, whether be it, it's not a fair
exactly.
It's none of it is fair. It doesn't. So from the top, it doesn't start right, because it's not fair to begin with. None of it.
Hmm.
So how do we? Not how do we change it, but where do we start?
Like, I think, I mean, just to add to that, like one thing that we need to see that it's everything is stacked and packed on top of one another. We literally have to peel it away one at a time.
Layer at a go.
Besides the fact that you're dealing with the fact that there's gender and you're dealing with racial issues, you're still dealing with organizations who understands that a woman that grows up in a developed country is superior to a woman that grew up in a developing country.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we need to understand is that our postgrad is global, and we need to start creating separation within our gender. I think that's where it starts. We need to start tackling these and leading the conversations around, I'm black, but am I black from New York or am I black from the south of Ethiopia? Right.
I love that.
So I'm dealing already with my blackness in my country.
Yes.
But now I'm being seconded to a multinational in Europe, and I'm the African girl who has meager education. Those are the issues we have to deal with as well. So once we start, I mean, besides creating awareness on the ground, as I said, we need to start implementing regulations and leaning on our legislations that's fixing this. You know, that's fixing the narrative of, you female, if you're tall, you can only get certain jobs. If you're short, you can... 100%. We need to start looking at one another to allow equal opportunity. And not sort of women must be seen as equal. Women must be allowed equal opportunity.
And so based on merit, not based on the fact that we're female.
100%. Because then that will eradicate the issue of the woman in the south of Ethiopia and the woman in New York.
Agreed. I just want to go back a little bit to something you said, you know, when it comes to companies and the people sitting at the top making those decisions. For example, you will find a lot of career women. What I'm trying to get to is the division amongst women themselves,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you'll have a career woman who doesn't have potentially children. So for her, the inclusion is she's sitting at the table.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, because she has no responsibility. Yeah.
No.
Let's
not say that. Out of marriage, she's sitting there.
But no kids.
With no kids.
Yeah.
That's just a factor I want you to consider. Yeah. She has no kids, but she's at the table, and she is able to provide context in that space.
Absolutely.
To speak for the women that do have kids that are affected by the situation right now.
Mm.
But let's say she doesn't.
Mm.
Right?
Mm. Your caller, actually, just this morning, on the radar, I want to share with you guys, I just finished a book by Caroline Perez, where she talks about invisible women. And she breaks it down. I mean, she's a researcher that breaks it down how, you know, we're living in a man's world. And right to the point where you said, I'm just going to take a script out of where she shared, where, as you said, a woman at the top, you know, was in the boardroom making these decisions, and it got to a point where she fell pregnant. And where she was parked was so far from, like, reception and walking in. It got to that stage where she got to 7-8 months, and you start waddling. All of a sudden, but I mean, she's been at the company for years. Got to the point where it's like, okay, I need to actually have, and only recently, even when you go to malls, only recently you see parkings for prams and. But girls, ladies, you know, do yourself a favor and get hold of that book, because it blew my mind, like from bathrooms, like everything that we know it to be, she breaks down stats and you know, how we are just getting by, and it shouldn't be like that.
Right.
So, And even with you, I actually saw you posting a story with Mason, and it's like you worked your full, 9-to-5 job, and as you switched off, you went into mommy mode because you were in his playroom and he was busy.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm thinking,
you're
actually on to the next shift now. So it's interesting.
It's not even the next shift situation, because Carla's currently working from home.
So it's actually just
it's not like she can put Mason in a corner from 9 a.m. to 5 and be on the line. You sit in that box and don't say anything until 5. So she's still a mom and juggling all of this throughout the day, throughout work, throughout deadlines, throughout targets, throughout all of that.
Yep.
And do we complain?
Listen, I could complain for days, but you'd be here forever.
But
you know,
it's gone to a place where we've become so complacent with, I got to do what I got to do, and we just keep it moving.
Absolutely. And we sort of going on with the business.
Give a guy 2 kids and give him a job and see how that's going to work out. And give him all the responsibility that we currently have to do and see how that's going to work out.
Right.
I promise you, the laws will probably even change.
Right. But you know what the thing is? As women, we're so resilient. And in terms of humans adapt, but if there's anyone that leads in that space. It's women. We
absolutely
adapt. And although I've got a 9-to-5 and that time frame does not change, even given everything that's happening now, I've just had to become a lot more efficient with my time. So there are times where I have to step away from work to go and take care of something to do with Mason, but it's time management. But I do wish that there was someone that could speak for me in those situations where we're like, hey guys, how about the fact that we need to rethink the whole thing? Right? We're working from home. That's great. But can we really stick to this 9-to-5, or should I say 8-to-5? Because I work 8-to-5. I don't know about y'all. So I work 8-to-5. So is that still a construct that we need to continue, for example? Those are the sort of conversations we need to be having.
Yeah.
Without that meaning that you're going to cut my salary. You know,
anybody got
that's not what I'm trying to have.
That's not what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
So my input is still going to be the same.
Yeah.
Sitting on my bum for a certain amount of hours, I'm sure the data can show that that is just not the case anymore.
Yeah. You know why that issue exists, Carla? Because you're still having a 4% female integration at the decision-making level.
There we go.
So you have decision makers that's making decisions on behalf of women who are not women. So you cannot have someone understand the calamity or the difficulty of your 8-to-5, including masoning, including the rest of your duties, because you have someone making decision on your policies and procedures at work that is not having the living experience that you are. And this is exactly it. So, you know, beside us creating insane awareness, and in South America, in Mexico, Brazil, you saw, which is unheard of, you know, you saw women, and in the Arab states, you see women that are speaking up, women that are marching, massive women marches, crazy women marches.
Did you see that red woman march?
The red woman march
in Brazil.
And they're marching up to parliament, because one thing you need to understand, I mean, once we have full transformation all the way up in parliament, passing bills. That's where it's at.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that women are marching all the way to the first step of parliament. It's worked before, and it will definitely work again.
Just give some context around the Red March. What were they marching for?
So they were marching for basically awareness on gender-based violence. That's what was sparked. It happened at the same time with, I think, All Black March in Cape Town, South Africa, where all the women were...
It was in Cape Town.
Right.
Yes, where all of us wore black, and you had multiple women that marched. So it was really awareness during the time of the pandemic, because, you know, the pandemic hit, people were stuck, you know, in their house with your respective abuser, with your children, with your respective abuser in the house. So COVID-19, I believe, came with a very feminine energy. Because besides
a strong feminine energy,
because beside the fact that we can sit here and speak about the difficulties we have, the awareness that's been created in the past month has been out of this world.
Yeah.
You know, women are starting to stand up. Women are starting to make decisions, and also allowing zero tolerance to the nonsense. So besides the issues that, you know, gender-based violence, your percentage, your stats that went up, it happened in every single country, you know, that you can think about that's affected by gender-based violence. And women just had enough.
So, Liz, I mean, just in terms of, like, all these movements and stuff that are happening, you know, what would you say? Because, I mean, it can also get, like, the audience and people can, you know, get fatigued to be like, oh, another, you know, how do we keep it relevant? You mentioned marching. Do you think that's enough? Where, you know, we make our voices heard, and to keep it consistent.
Yeah.
So it's not just a phase. It's not just one day we're wearing black and the next day we go back to normal.
Yeah.
What do you think we could do just to keep it?
The momentum.
The momentum.
I think, like, with any strike, sort of have intentions, and you have a manifesto. You have, you know, you always hear they're taking the agreement up to parliament. Besides the awareness, you're trying to create and seeing how far you can be with awareness, whether it's social media, you know, get on radio, get on TV. You must really have an intention of what the strike is about. So if you do remember the gender-based violence conversation that was led a couple of months ago when, you know, numbers just surged, what they really wanted was for police or your first level of law enforcement to step it up. You know, so you really have to go and deliver. Your strike shouldn't be futile. It should be protected, and you should have intentions and really set the boundaries of why it is that you are striking. So you will have a representative. It's always nice to have NGOs, you know, or you have women that are promoting and protecting and speaking and leading these type of conversations, you need to have a nice huge conglomerate of women coming together, standing together, and absolutely, and moving forward to change what is happening from the root, doing the root cause analysis. So before the strike happens, there's a root cause analysis that is happening, and we are saying, what is it that we have to change? We're going to make noise around these five topics.
Right.
And once we heard, we can hand over our five topics and we can start deliberating on what we're going to pass as regulations.
This is like our strike right here, right?
We're escalating.
There's been 10 people CC'd in this email.
As per my last email.
You know, the truth is we can all make a difference, right? And sometimes it can come in form of a strike, protest. It can come, I don't know, you create an organization or you can start a podcast. And, you know, for us, this has been like our therapy, you know, but for us to also become a little bit more aware and become educated by having conversations with the likes of yourself, Leslie. So that was super insightful. I just have a question on the GBV. Would you say, since you mentioned the other countries, would you say that it was commendable of our president to have banned alcohol? Do you think that that curbed some of the effects on GBV/domestic violence?
Definitely, the stats are there.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's staggering.
I always sort of, you know, shy away from that topic because I don't consume alcohol.
Me too.
So I'm always just like, you know, one thing I can say is that just, you know, I always rely on facts. And
the
data is there. So, you know, whether the government and our president made a decision to ban alcohol, and it's caused a ripple effect on the economy, it's caused a lot of job losses, but there are certain decisions, you know, he had to weigh up.
Yeah.
So when he made that decision, you know, just from a gathering data perspective, it worked.
Yeah.
I know this is, like I said, it's quite a sensitive point because there are people who disagree, and I think everybody needs to be equal, really. When if you're banning one thing, you should ban the other thing. But I mean, when you just relying on facts, the facts was there.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that one. I thought it was quite bold and brave of him to take on that decision and to take on the corporate world that way.
Definitely.
But yeah,
because you're
definitely not the most favorable topic to.
It increases, you know, fights. You like you said, you have a situation where you're working from home, kids are at home, people are frustrated. Tensions are high. Everyone's. I mean, there's human error. I'm human. You are human.
And now we add a substance to that.
Can imagine how escalated that would have become. With substance.
Absolutely.
Involved. So
and one thing I can say is this topic we could actually sideline gender, because I do believe, you know, alcohol is consumed, you know, across.
Yep.
So I wouldn't say that, you know, it was the men drinking, you know. I'm just saying that was the issue that was picked up, and because people were so in such close, you know, we're social beings, but we were in such close proximity of one another during the lockdown that of course that you would be immediately affected by, you know, somebody who is drunk in the household or battling with mental health and then consuming alcohol.
Yeah. Or in worst cases, they've lost their jobs and now, you know, I don't know, drown your sorrows.
Absolutely.
And make everybody around you, immediately around you, the enemy. It's I can only imagine what a horrible space that must have been. I think what he did was really brave.
I feel quite biased when you ask me about the president's decisions because I love him. I don't know how else to explain.
He really is cupcake.
I'm sorry, can we just touch on the fact that Leslie's entire face just lit up
talking about the president?
I love it.
I become offended when people address our president on his first name. Because he's not our friend, he's our president. He's president Cyril Ramaphosa.
You tell him, Cyril.
And, you tell him, girl.
He's very impressive.
You know what? From where we come from, I think that is something worth celebrating. When somebody does a good job, give credit where credit is due. That's how I feel about him. And I think what he did, and which is why I wanted to bring it up, and I think it is impressive, something that a lot of world leaders were not able to do. So that's saying something all on its own. So yeah, I'm with you there.
I wanted to share something. I heard an interviewer or podcast I was watching in the week or listening to, and you know, when they were sort of speaking about gender-based violence and pushing the narrative of equality, they were really speaking about, you know, heads of state lamenting, you know, women's pain. You have heads of state, you know, when you're sitting in conferences, men who are pushing feminism, equality, men who are lamenting the pain of children and women suffering. So one thing that I do also, you know, want to touch on or create awareness that you have right on the top as well. You have heads of state, you have people who are in decision-making roles that are lamenting the pain that is happening in the world and that's created with violence against women and children.
Yeah.
So once those heads of state starts finding the rest of their friends and they can lament together, we can start making decisions on what affects women.
I agree. It's going to take time.
It is a process.
We have to be patient.
It's a process. I think we get frustrated at a point. Yeah. But we
various
need
points.
To, yeah. But we need to remember to just follow through and keep going. I don't
We're
think it's something that's going
right?
to. Yeah.
When did a woman ever become
because
tired?
Because the possibilities are
when?
Limitless.
Seriously, please tell me. Oh, like when do we get to throw the towel in? Like
exactly.
Never.
Women don't
we keep it
tired.
Moving, guys. Again, we adapt. We are
adapt.
Resilient.
Yeah.
We just.
Let me ask you something. So, unconscious bias has to be one of the greatest challenges that any type of equality faces. In your experience, what is the way forward? How do we change this narrative?
So I think that's such an interesting question because, like I said, I'll speak about living experience, and I'm in the metals industry. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I can tell you is that you have, you know, huge projects working towards creating awareness of these biasness, whether it's ageism, you know, or whether it's hiring somebody at my age. Something I learned very recently is that I always thought, you know, being in your mid-30s and having a child is really the devil's work in the corporate world. But one thing that I have learned is that no children's a devil's work as well, because they have to budget. They believe, and this is where your biasness comes in, that a woman my age coming into an executive role, the company is budgeting for my maternity leave.
Yes.
And that's why it's so difficult, you know, to start penetrating your decision-making roles because they're afraid you're going to be gone for a year, 2 years, and then have another baby.
And then have another baby.
Like seven babies, and then you don't work and you
no,
don't
because
do anything.
That's all we do. Because
exactly.
That's all we do.
So what is happening is programs are being put in place in certain industries as well as regulations for, you know, specialized industries whereby you need to report to your board and you need to report to government and departments on what you are doing with the culture and with hiring and sort of bypassing biasness. So you have to report on what you have done, you know, in your vacancy or your recruitment to bypass this.
Imagine having to explain procreation
exactly.
and planet and put a law behind procreation.
Oh,
for me,
it doesn't
make sense for me.
Yeah.
Imagine having to explain, oh, I'm sorry, I'm very competent and I'm very good at what I do, but
I need to take
a year.
3 months.
In 5 years. I have my eggs frozen and I've decided that in 5 years I'm going to have kids. Yeah. So in 5 years I'm going to need maternity leave for about 8 months or so. Do you guys think you can fit me in?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Work
yourself to the bone in the interim.
Yes.
Yeah, that's... So yeah,
just make it worth it for
make
us
it worth it
to invest in you. I was definitely affected by that, and it was something that I remember speaking to my girlfriends about. Like, I was so frustrated and angry, and if there's anything from a legislation that needs to change, I feel, is that we do need to get private companies to pay women their full salary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
when they are on maternity leave. What do you mean I'm going to receive a percentage and you're actually doing me a favor? Because the government says that private institutions do not have to pay you.
The narrative already, I think, like I said, we're changing slowly. Because men are allowed paternity leave now.
Yeah.
So now the conversation changes, right? It's no longer fun, you know, because with your rights comes responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So you have paternity leave, but, you know, then you will see it all goes back to, you know, being inclusive, ensuring that our next generation of kids are good. Because for the first 1,000 days, the father is present, the mother's present. We're trying to change a social psychology that we've been struggling with for many years.
Yep.
So if we're going to be inclusive about paternity leave, we have to be inclusive about many other things. And just, sorry, Lebo, the point that I wanted to make was companies or private sector as well as government are forced to do a dipstick culture test. Now, you like I said, you have to report to the board. So you no longer report to the board on how much money you're making. They want to know who's making the money and who's making the decisions. So you do a culture dipstick, and we need to see, you know, where is this transformation and integration that you're speaking about? Women, race, gender, tall people, short people, young people, old people. Mm-hmm. You have to provide a report. You have to start taking accountability for integration, for development, for training. And this is really where your culture, you know, how you structure your culture. So private sectors and organizations have to now take accountability. And you have your BEE flow through. So that's legislation, regulations. You now have to account. You have to account to your sector. You have account to your regulator. Despite the fact that we're continuing business, we now have so many women in management positions. And we have a transformed board. So you now have to account to the regulator, and this affects your investment. This affects your reputation
and your BE score.
And this affects your BE score. So
just on the just to get a little bit controversial, well, I really hope not, but it's something that I'm curious about. I don't know if any of you watch Legacy.
No.
Yeah, but in the more recent storyline, we have this white girl who gets fired from, you know, the big legacy corporate, and now she's trying to look for a job, and she gets so many rejections because at the end of the day, hiring her means bringing down that BE score, yet she is qualified. Yeah. How does that now play into that unconscious biasness? Because I feel like now that to say unconscious biasness and to also say BE could be a little complicated. Just saying.
So I can answer that.
Yeah.
Just to go back, affirmative action is inclusive of women, regardless of the color of your skin. So that really can be questionable. You know, that woman that is not getting a job can start questioning and requesting reasoning, because affirmative action or triple BEE is not only black empowerment. It's female disability as well as previously disadvantaged. So, like I said, it's an understanding of your new regulation as well as legislation that now has transformed or mutated to become better, because despite the fact that we are sourcing or we're finding alignment racially in our corporate world, women are included as well as disabled people.
Yeah.
So, you know, to work around that, you need to start asking questions, because you have the right to back it up. You know, right. I'm not just asking the question, look, I have a postgrad degree and I have the merit to get this job. Women need to understand that they fall within the ambit of affirmative action.
Escalated.
Well, they don't make that very clear in the storyline, which actually sells a very bad picture, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Because they actually make it very clear that they're selling a South African narrative for a white female.
Absolutely.
You should actually watch it.
You've got some catching up to do, friend.
The plot thickens. Guys, no, Legacy is lit. Please watch it.
I've never heard of it.
It's lit.
Sorry, last point, and this might be a bit insensitive. Correct me if I'm wrong. I want to touch back onto your social psychology aspect of everything. I know we're meant to be resilient, and we are resilient, but is a part of our resilience harmful? to some aspect to ourselves?
Well, at least for me, right? I want to say, like, I'm strong, but I don't want to be tested at every corner.
But we get tested at every corner. Do you know what I mean? And we still, we push through. And that's what we're... Also, again, we do this, that's what we're meant to do thing. Are we?
Yeah, no.
Are we? Is our to some extent, is our resilience a bit harmful to ourselves? I think about it at times, and I think maybe sometimes a little bit it is, because you push yourself so far to the point where when you've far reached the cliff, you don't even realize it because you're resilient, because you're strong, and because you are used to the norm of carrying on and staying strong and
carrying the load,
going with it.
Yeah.
What happens when you implode? Or explode?
Normalizing, you know, crazy behavior. Normalizing.
I
think
that doesn't sit right with me.
It's not an insensitive question.
Okay.
And I definitely think that I wouldn't. You know, say it's a legal question as well, because I'll tell you, like I said again, from my living experience, is that when you become fatigued, this is what I do. I think about all the other women in history that have fought for us, and I do believe our fight is different, but our fight continues. And when you do feel like you're getting off the cliff or getting pushed to the cliff, you think about, as I said, in my study, you know, you can ask Dominique, I have, you know, pictures up of the greats, many women that fought for us in South Africa and in Africa at large. And we need to be reminded that toilets were built in certain organizations only 10 years ago for females. Our fight is different, but our fight continues.
Mm. Well,
thank you.
Yo, thanks, Lizzie Ann. I mean...
Again, I just feel woke today.
Right?
Dumb girls
you love.
Dumb
you know, in the UN, most of the conversations is that they were saying you need to remain woke. And it was like, I mean, at that level, you have heads of state saying how women need to be woke.
Yeah.
And it's also part of us not accepting, like I said, any nonsense. You should have zero tolerance. Mm. Knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. Understand the law. Understand how you can equip yourself to use the law and regulations as your weapon. So, you know, before you get to the edge and feel like you're being pushed too far, understand what's your rights and how you can find recourse.
Thank you.
Amen. I think just from my side to wrap up, in this week, I was watching Tiffany Haddish's show called She Ready. And I learned a lot, Black Unicorn. And I mean, mine was just blown when she makes reference to how we were actually all born as women. And only as soon as that Y chromosome kicks in,
exactly,
then men actually just drop. And she's like, you know, that's why God gave men strong arms and legs, because they couldn't hold on to their vagina. You know? So,
that's hilarious.
Yeah, check it out. Much love for you.
Same. But no, she's a breath of fresh air. And honestly, we need that sort of, how do I put it, free expression of femininity, but also like at every level of madness, craziness, in all her beauty, in all her fullness.
Normalize the vagina.
Normalize the vagina.
Let's just call it that. Vagina.
Any guy.
No, it's a vagina.
Normalize.
Vagina.
Power to the vagina.
All right.
This was so much fun, and thank you, Leslie, for being here with us. We look forward to having you here with us for further conversations, because this is just the beginning. This is literally, we just scratched the surface of everything that there really is to discuss. And you know what it is. You can find us on Instagram at...
Dominique. Limitless podcast conversations.
Okay, let me say that again. On Instagram at Limitless Conversations Podcast. Okay, you find us there. Interact with us. Let us know what it is that you loved about this episode, or what you guys want to hear more about. Let us connect. Let us create a community and just build more out of strong women, strong, independent thought leaders, amazing women. That's it for now. See you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.